We'll take this opportunity to welcome those who are visiting in the audience. We want you to know we're happy that you're here. We ask that you would listen attentively to the things that are presented. If you have questions concerning what you hear, we'll be more than happy to entertain those questions. It's our hope and our prayer that we can say things that will be encouragement to you, give you better insight on your duty and responsibility to God. And if you have any questions, please do not. There are many of our number who are ill, suffering with various things. Only in our prayers, but in our calls and our visits to see if we can be help to them and an encouragement as they go through the difficulties of life. A number of months ago, earlier this year, I did a series discussing the struggles of being a Christian. And I looked at various things that we struggle with as God's people. And we used as a text, we used in Luke chapter 10, we used Martha and Mary who were sitting at the feet of Jesus. And Martha, she was worried about taking care of her guests and making sure that they were comfortable, had what they needed. Listening to what Jesus had to say. And so Martha implored Jesus to tell Mary to come and help her because she was overwhelmed. But Jesus said in Luke 10, verse 41, said, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and troubled about many things." Now, as we mentioned earlier, this didn't mean that she was a bad person. It didn't mean she was immoral. It didn't mean that she didn't lack love for the Lord because she wasn't sitting there listening to him speak. It didn't mean any of that. And it just means that if you use the New American Standard Version, it uses the word bothered. And she was just bothered by many things. She just had, we use the term sometimes, too many irons in the fire. Too many things coming at us at once. And that means she was distracted. And when you are distracted, when you are juggling many things, you begin to struggle. And we looked at various aspects of this. We looked at our faith. We looked at obedience. We looked at different things, forgiveness, temptation. We looked at this from a very many different angles. And I want to suggest to you this morning, the subject that we're going to talk about today is one of the most important things that we do as people on this earth. Like Martha, we struggle with many things. And one of the things that we struggle with, and rightfully so, is we struggle with parenting. There is not a more needful, more responsible, and more diligent service that we need to give attention to than parenting our children and our grandchildren. I know many of us are older and our children have grown, but a lot of us have grandchildren. And so that job's not over yet. And so I want to talk this morning and this evening about the struggle with parenthood. You know, in my own life, we had four children, three girls and a boy. And I could probably tell you the same thing I heard a fellow tell me one time. I went to visit him in his home in Oregon when I was there for a meeting, and he had a little plaque on his wall. And it said this, he says, "Before I had children, I had six theories on how to raise children. Now I have six children and no theories." Well, I could say the same thing about four. My three girls and our son were different. They were different as night and day. And I would tell you from a practical standpoint, and this has just been my experience, that there are different struggles, there are different challenges in raising a daughter and raising a son. There are a different set of challenges. And so you're going to have to know going in that what worked on one child is not going to work on the other one. But the other thing that you're going to have to know is that when you become a parent, that is a blessing from God. That is something that God blessed you with in your life. I want you to take your Bible and turn to Psalms 127. And Psalms 127 makes it very apparent that blessings, children are a blessing from God. In Psalms 127, in verse 3 it says, "Lo, children are a heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows are in the hands of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy is a man who has his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate." Now, I've been asked a lot of times what a quiver is, but we're going to say, for lack of a better thing, it's more than one. But whether you have one, two, three, or 10, it doesn't matter. Being a parent is a challenge, and at times, it can be a struggle. But I want to remind you of another woman who didn't have any children, and prayed to God fervently that God would grant her petition and give her a child. And if he granted her request to give her a child, she would give that child back to him in service for the remainder of his life. That woman was Hannah, and the son that God blessed her with was named Samuel. And she did exactly what she promised to do. She gave that son back to the Lord in service. She took him to Eli, and he trained him to be a priest in God's house. He also became a prophet, and he later became the last judge of the nation of Israel. Hannah was also blessed after she gave Samuel up to have three other children in her life. But I want to suggest to you this morning that Hannah is not unique. When God gave us our children, he also wants them back. He wants us to give the children that he gave us, he wants us to give them back to him. And he has left it in our responsibility and in our care that we strive to do that. Being a parent is a tremendous responsibility. It is a tremendous and awesome privilege, honor, but it is a grave responsibility. In Luke chapter 1, verse 66, talking about the child Jesus, it says, "What kind of child will this be?" Now, you know what? We all have that in our mind when we begin the job of parenting. What kind of child will this be? What will this child turn out to be? Whether they're a man, whether they're a woman, a boy or a girl, we wonder what lies ahead in the future of this child. But I want to ask you a question as we begin this study. What is at stake? What is at stake when we become a parent? And when you begin to have children, is there anything at stake? I told you it's a tremendous responsibility, and so it is, because there are two things at stake. When you and I are blessed to become parents, there are two things that are at stake. Number one is the soul of the child. That is at stake. God has granted us the care, the upbringing, and the molding of that child into what that child may become in their life. The second thing at stake is our own soul, because of one of the things that we will all give an account of on the day of judgment is how we handled the job of parenting our children. Now, I want to hasten to add something here so there's no misunderstanding. You can do everything right. You can bring your child up in a way that you know God would have him to bring up. And you can do everything that you know how to do to teach that child to be godly, to follow God, to have God in their life, to do the things that they would need to do. And later on, they could choose to go in a different direction. Does that mean that you failed? No. That does not mean you fail. But at the same time, If we send a conflicting message, if we don't do our jobs right, and if we did not take our responsibility seriously, then God will hold us accountable for what we did. But remember, there comes a point in a child's life when they're accountable to God for their decisions, for their choices, and for what they do. Now, there's a lot of debate when that comes, but God knows when that is. But suffice to say that when we have a child, then we have our souls at stake, and we have that child's soul at stake. When we have our children at home, one of the prayers that I uttered over and over in my life is, I don't care what they become in life, I want them to love God and I want them to be part of His family. Because nothing else matters. Let me say that again. Nothing else matters about that child except where he or she will spend eternity. When do you quit worrying about them? Never. Not until you die. Do you ever quit being a parent? Your baby will always be your baby. Your oldest will always be your oldest child. And you will never stop being concerned about them. And you know why that is? It's because you love them. That's how God is with us. God loves us, and He never stops loving us no matter what we do. And you know what? No matter what our child may do, right or wrong, no matter what course they might go that we might not agree with, that's not going to change one iota how much we love them, how much we care for them, and how much we want to be part of their life, and how much we will continue to try to put them in the right direction. But herein lies the struggle. The struggle is in how you accomplish the goal. How do you accomplish the goal of putting that child in the direction that they need to go? And how do you accomplish it in the world that we live in? That's a struggle. And that's a struggle that each and every one of us in this audience who are a parent and have been a parent and are grandparents, we understand this struggle well. So I want to give you God's. I want to give you God's book on how you have the best chance of success. What can I do as a father or a mother to give me the best possible chance to lead my children in the way that they need to go? Well, first of all, what does our child need? What does a child need? I want to tell you, a child doesn't need the latest fads. He doesn't need all the things that will make him popular in school. He doesn't need the latest electronic gizmos. What he needs more than he needs anything else is he needs the time of his mother and his father, and he needs to have their attention, and he needs, and she needs, to know that they can come to them and talk to them at any time about anything, and that parent will take the time to listen and to understand and to try to give guidance. Ladies and gentlemen, a child needs time. Let me illustrate it this way. Before you got married, it was just about you. It was just about what you wanted to do, what you liked to do, where you wanted to go. But when you got married, that changed. Then it wasn't just you. Then it's us, it's we. And then your priorities change, because now there's somebody else to consider. And so that changed the way you altered your time. And now you have a child. And now you've got another equation you've got to fit in there. And so now you've got something else that demands your time. You have a job. You have a house to take care of. You have things that have to be done. And so here we are, juggling all of these things and trying to make the best use of our time. But brethren, I want to suggest to you this morning that one thing you better not juggle and one thing that you better not cut short is the time that you give your children. Why? Well, let me give you some reasons why. It's a new demand on our time. Time and how it's spent is important. In Ephesians 5 and verse 16, the Apostle Paul wrote to the church at Ephesus. He made a statement that is very telling in our discussion. He says, redeem the time because the days are evil. What does that mean, to redeem the time? To redeem the time means to buy it back. It means to use it wisely. It means to make the best use of your time that you can. Ladies and gentlemen, we all have a 24-day clock if God lets us live a day. And so how we use that 24-hour time period that we're given is decisions and choices and priorities that we establish in our life. And nobody but nobody establishes your priorities except you. Now, I know a lot of people like to argue about that because they got this responsibility and that duty. But let me tell you something. If you're too busy to spend time with your child, you better sit down and you better reconstruct what you're doing. Because you're cutting short something that can bring great heartache and tragedy to you down the road. We need to make time for our children. It is important. Children need our time. But you know, that's an easy thing to neglect. We got a job. We got commitments. We got deadlines. We got this to do. We got that to do. We're trying to take care of our home and keep the upkeep. And we're trying to make a good impression at work. We're trying to scale up the ladder. We're trying to progress so we can get a better paying job, so we can do a better job at taking care of our children. And then we got to look after ourselves. I understand all of that. But brethren, let me ask you a question. Did God give us all those physical blessings in life to make it a challenge to be in competition with our children? Is that why he did it? Did he give us all these physical blessings in order to be in competition with the most precious blessing that he gave us, our children? No, brethren, you got to prioritize what is most important. And the thing that is most important is the time that you give your children. Because you're only going to have them for a short period of time. You know when this hits you? In 2001, in March, I stood in front of a group of people in Dayton, Ohio, and married our youngest daughter. And I'm standing there doing the ceremony with her and my son-in-law. You can't believe what's going through my mind. Where did it go? Where did these 19 years, 18, where did they go? I remember when she was little. But she ain't little anymore. And I'm getting ready to hand off one of the most precious things that God has ever given me to somebody that I'm going to entrust with something that's very important to me. And I had a hard time. I had a hard time talking about it now. But you should have saw me on that day. I did good until I had to pronounce them husband and wife. As soon as I got that out, I knew I'm out of it. No longer am I going to have the role and the responsibility that I had. Now it's going to be given to someone else. And I choked, and I finally got it out. 6 months later, I'm marrying our daughter Jessica in October. And in the procession line after the wedding, she gets out of it and comes right up to me before everybody comes down, and takes me by the lapel of my tux and says, "You will not, under any circumstance, do that in October. So get in your mind now that you got to say husband and wife and don't stutter." Okay, I got it, Jessica, I got it. Well, I'll tell you what, you know, when it came time for her wedding, I didn't stutter. And the reason I had a problem then, she wouldn't quit crying. So it was somebody else then. But what I'm telling you is, enjoy your children while you got them. Because in a very short time, it'll be gone. And you can't get it back. Do you ever think you'd like to leave them a little? You ever had that thought? This is so good, I wish they'd never grow up. Now, you don't really believe that. But in your mind, you do, because you know what's coming. And so, use the time wisely to teach and to train them. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Now, that is a general problem. That is not an absolute truth. But what that means is, set the foundation that gives you the best possible chance for success. Because even if they take a detour down the road, they have the foundation that they can always come back to. But if you don't lay the foundation, what hope do they have at all? What chance do they have at all if you don't lay the proper foundation? And so you need to train that child. You know what? A child has to be trained. He has to be taught. He has to be instructed, because he doesn't know. When you get that child, he doesn't know anything. Except when he's hungry, you can help him. And when he's sad and when he cries, you can make it feel better. That's all a child knows. And then for the next years, you're instilling in that child values, principles, priorities that that child will carry with them the rest of their adult life. You know when children form their basis of what they're going to do in their life? In the first 5 years of their life. You know what the Roman Catholic Church says? You give me a child for 5 years and I got him. You take a good look at them. Those are formative years, and we need to be teaching and training them. We need to be an example, as Ezekiel said in Ezekiel 16:44. You know who knows you better than you know yourself? Your children. Ask your, you know what, I could ask your children, are your mom and dad, are they real faithful to the Lord? You know who knows that better than anybody? Your parents, your children do. Your children, let me ask you a question. How does your children learn about marriage? Where did they learn about that at? Where did they learn the most training that they'll get about marriage? Watching mom and dad. Where did they learn about being a parent? Where did they get the things that they're going to use when they become parents themselves? What are they going to lean back on? What experience are they going to use? What mom and dad did with us. So they're watching you. You know what's really humbling to watch? A little boy or a little girl trying to follow in the footsteps of their parents. You ever seen a child when there's snow and it's deep and the parent is walking ahead of them and there's the child walking behind trying to get in the footsteps of their parents? That's a good analogy. Because, you know that little song we sing? Watch little eye, because his little eye's watching us. Let me tell you something, brethren. What you do in your life could come back to haunt you for a long time in your children. You run down the church, you run down the preacher, you run down the elders, you run down this, and you run down that, and you let your children listen to that for 10, 12, 15 years, you let them hear that, and then when they turn 18 and they don't want anything to do with the church and they get out of the house and they don't want nothing to do with it, and you can't understand why? And you know what? You better not tell your children nothing that you don't want them to repeat. A number of years ago, a gospel preacher, they wrote a special issue in a magazine about funny things that happened during a meeting. So, one preacher was at this home and they had dinner. I'll tell you two stories here. They happened to the same preacher, matter of fact. But I won't tell you, you know who it is, but I'm not going to tell you. But anyway, he was sitting there and they had the prayer and they ate. And he didn't have any silverware. He said, "Sister, I need some silverware." "Oh, I'm sorry. Susie," I'm not sure that was her name, but that's the name he used in the article. "Susie, why didn't you give Brother so-and-so any silverware?" He goes, "Well, I didn't do it on purpose." Now, the smart thing for the parent to do was not to ask the next question. But she didn't think about that. She said, "Well, Susie, why did you do that?" "Well, I didn't think he needed it. You said he ate like a pig." How long do you think that dinner was? Another time, the lady of the house wanted to impress her guest. Preacher was over and wanted him to say the blessing. The little boy, he's about 8. He says, "Mommy, I don't know what to say." He said, "Just say what your mom and dad say." So he thanked God for his mommy and daddy, thanked God for his grandparents, and thanked him for his life. And then he said, "I don't know why I invited all these people over here today." Now, brethren, those are little things that we can laugh at. But I'm going to tell you, there's other things that are not very funny to laugh at. Where does a child learn prejudice? There's nothing more innocent than a child. How does a child learn to hate? To look at the color of somebody's skin? Where does he learn that at? You think it's by accident that in the ISIS that they teach an ideology to their children to hate, that they have no regard for people who are not like them? You know what we call that? We call that brainwashing. But we're not talking about brainwashing. We're talking about we need to be an example. We need to be an example of what a good father is. We need to be an example of what a good mother is, what a good husband is, a good wife. The husband and wife always agree. You know, maybe it happens. I've had people tell me, "You know, we've been married for 50 years and we've never fought." Okay. That's not me, but okay. But you know what? I don't think it's so bad for a child to see that parents don't agree. I think they need to learn how you work that out when you don't agree. They need to learn with how you work that out. Let me ask you a question. What did you teach your children about how you take care of things when you and your husband didn't agree? What lesson did you teach them? We can spend time with our child and we can still neglect them. Now, what do I mean by that? How do we spend time with our child and still neglect them? You spend time that's convenient for you. You spend time with them that fits when you can spend time with them. How many of you ever heard "Cats in the Cradle"? Ever heard that song? Google it. Because it's a humbling song. It talks about a child that had a man that had a little boy. And his little boy was always asking for his time, and his dad was always busy. And he says, "We'll get together sometime." And the chorus goes, "I'm going to be like you, Dad. I want to be like you." Later on, we get down to the end of the song. He's grown up. And his dad's alone. And he calls his son. And he wants his son to come and see him because he's lonely. He says, "I'd like to, Dad, but I got the kids and I'm busy and I just don't have time. But I'll make it. I'll make it soon, son. I'll make it soon." But then when he hangs up the phone, he says, "My son has turned into me. It's a humbling song. You see, we need to spend the time that they need. Brethren, a child's problem may not seem like a problem to you, but it's a problem to that child. And that child is looking for a solution. And if you turn him away because you're too busy, he'll find his answer somewhere else. Do you want him to do that? When we don't have time to listen to our children, they will find someone to listen to them. Mark it down. And the devil will always be ready to take in the gap. He's never too busy. Hindrances, work, sports, TV, hobbies. I want you to know that there's nothing wrong with any of those things. There's nothing simple about work, about sports, about TV, or about hobby. If it is, then I'm guilty of all of that. But they can be hindrances to time that you give your children. Yeah, you've got to work. But that doesn't mean that you can neglect your children because you have to work. Because you have to rest and you have to have recreation. That's fine, but not at the expense of your children. TV. I think I know now, as I'm getting older, why they call it the idiot box. I think I know why now. But we need to understand that none of these things are wrong, but all of them can rob precious time away from your children. You got to think about that. You got to try to eliminate the... You got to lessen the hindrances. We have to work. Nothing wrong with watching TV. Nothing wrong with having... Watching sports, no wrong with any of that, but you have to balance it. You have to balance it so that your children is not neglected in the process. Easy to neglect the marriage. Now, I know this well because my mom made this mistake. I love my mother. I love her to death. She was a good mom. She loved me. And I wouldn't be where I'm at if it wasn't for my mother and father, especially my mother. Because for many, many years, she had to do it by herself. So I love my mother, but my mother made a mistake. She put all of her time and energy into us, to her four boys, and now with her husband. That was a mistake. Now that doesn't justify anything my dad did, because it doesn't. But understand this, that God didn't give you one blessing to neglect the other one. You have to nourish your relationship as husband and wife while you're raising your children. You know why? The day will come when your children will leave the nest. And when they do, then it's going to be mom and dad by themselves. If you neglected that for 18 years, what's going to be there when you try to change and take a different turn in your life? What's going to be there? Brethren, you have to do both. I want you to understand this point. God didn't give us something that we don't have the ability to do. We have the ability to give time to our children and give time to our mates and the other duties that God has given us. We can juggle all those and do a good job of doing it. We have the ability to do it. But that's where the struggle comes in learning how to accomplish it. By giving each thing the time that it needs. You know what? People don't stay married today for 30, 40, 50 years by accident. It doesn't just happen by accident. There is time invested in that. There's energy invested in that. And you have to do that with your marriage, and you have to do that with your children. You've got to do both. Because both are important. So you're going to have to learn to prioritize your time. Parents wrap totally in their children. That's a mistake. Neglect each other. Children leave home, they don't even know each other. And love and commitment to each other. You know what? You want to teach your children. While you're raising them, you want to teach your children the love that you have in your marriage. You want them to see it. You want them to be able to see what a good marriage is. Why? You know why? Because children that come from homes that are good marriages will, by the highest probability, have a good marriage themselves. Is it by accident that the majority of broken homes today produce broken homes in their children? Is that just a coincidence, or does that just happen for a reason? You see, brother, we need to understand that I want my children to know what it means to have a good marriage. I want them to look at their mother and their father and realize that what they had is what they can have. That's what I want them to see. To do that, you're going to have to spend time. In Ephesians chapter 5, you know the drill very well about the responsibility of husbands and wives, and that God used as an illustration the relationship between Christ and the church. That's what kind of relationship God wants us to exemplify to our children in order to help them make good decisions when it comes time for them to be married. Hard for mothers to worship. I have the greatest empathy. You cannot believe the compassion and respect I have for mothers with young children. I watch my mother take four boys to church every time the doors were open. How much of the sermon did my mom ever hear? I don't know. But I'm going to go out on a limb here and say she missed more than she got. Well, I got it. My brothers got it. And that's why she took us. A crying child doesn't bother me, because that's where that child should be. I'm not distracted. That's where they need to be. And you know what? They're going to have to learn. They're going to have to learn, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But we need to understand that it's hard for mothers to worship. Seeing baby in a small child is frustrating. Young mothers are often discouraged. What's the use? I don't get anything out of it anyway. It's not just you. What about your child? You're teaching them, you're training them, you're molding them to understand that God needs to be part of their life. You are teaching a young soul the importance of serving God. God will pay dividends later. I am living proof of that. I'm a Christian today, and every time the doors are open, I'm going to be there, not because I'm a preacher, not because I've been a Christian, but because that's the way I was raised. My parents taught me a long, long time ago that God comes first in your life. I missed a lot of ball games, but I'd have rather been playing ball than go to Bible study. It's just one day, Mom. God will understand. I'll go twice next Sunday. I'll go every night at gospel meeting, and I won't complain. Just let me go with this game. No, you're going to Bible study. I didn't understand it then, but I understand it now. You know what? I'm thankful my parents made that decision. I'm thankful for that, because that's why I'm where I'm at. Let me tell you something else about small children. They're cute. Don't play with them. People that sit behind them, it's hard enough for a parent. Don't try to, oh, she's cute. It's hard enough. Don't make their job more cute. See them before service, see them after service. Don't try to play with them during service. Don't make the mother's job harder than it already is. And don't take selfies. Don't do that. Because you're setting the wrong preference. You're teaching the wrong thing. Well, we live in a gizmo age, don't we? You can take pictures anyway. But brethren, we're trying to train our children in what they need to see as important. You're teaching them to serve God, and that's why. Do they understand it all? No. Did I understand it all? No, I didn't. I was 12, 13 years old. I didn't understand. All I understood is I wanted to play ball, and I can't. And God's to blame for that. Well, that's a pretty bad equation. But it took me some years to figure out it wasn't God's fault. But you know what? I figured it out. We need to make decisions that are going to help our children. And so, you're going to have to spend time with your children. And the time that you spend, you're going to have to spend it wisely. Think about what you do. Think about what you say. Think about how you say it. Brethren, your children are little tape recorders. They're mimicking everything they see you do. And you know they're like elephants. They don't forget anything. You ever tell a child, well, we'll get ice cream later. You get it out of your mouth, you better remember that they ain't going to forget. But you know what? I don't want them to forget. Because I want them to know when I say something that that's true. I want them to be able to count on me. And so we need to spend time. Number two, controlling a child's behavior. How do I control my child's behavior? Well, number one, you got to start early. You don't wait till they're 5, 6. Don't wait till they're a teenager, because you lost them already if you're going to wait till then. You got to start very early in their life, forming their minds and their hearts and focusing them on what's important. You need to start earlier, and the earlier the better. Behavior under control early. Look at Proverbs chapter 19, and verse number 18. Proverbs chapter 19, verse number 18. Now, it never fails when I read these passages in Proverbs that people will accuse me that it's too harsh. Chasing your son while there is hope, but do not set your heart on his destruction. Now I want you to look at that passage again. Listen to what Proverbs says. Chasing your son while there is hope, and do not set your heart on his destruction. Now what does that mean? That means teach him when you have the ability to make a difference. Don't wait too long. I'll give you an illustration. My mother, remember, I love my mom, but my mom wasn't a big disciplinarian. And when we got out of line, she'd say, wait till your dad gets home. We did. We were gone. When dad got home, we were gone, because we knew what was coming. But finally, my dad had a talk with my mom and said, told her that when they do something, you need to discipline them right then, because it's fresh in their mind and you need to do it, and they need to know that they need to respect you just like me. And if there's a problem after that, I'll guarantee you I'll take care of it when I get home. And you know what? He did. And I learned to respect my mom just like it was my dad. If she said you couldn't do that, don't go to dad, because it won't do no good, because they back each other up. And so you're chasing them while they have time. If you're lenient with your child when they're young, it is not going to get better when they get older. Listen to what I'm telling you. It is a progression. It is a progression. Teach them to respect. They might not agree with me. They might not agree with my decisions. They might not agree with my rules. They might not agree with why I want them to do something. They may not agree with it, but they will respect me and do it that way while they live under my roof. Now, my dad, I feared my dad. I'm not going to cross my dad. I learned very early that I'm not going to do that. That's not a good, that doesn't have a good ending. But I didn't want my children to fear me. But I did want them to respect what I said. And I did want them to know that I'd follow through with what I say. You ever heard somebody say, now, if you do that one more time, I'm taking you out. Let me tell you what happened one time. I was in the back in Indiana one time, and this little boy was just being rambunctious and not paying any attention to his mother and father. And he must have told him three times, he said, if you do that again, I'm going to take you out, Ron. Don't do that again. One more time, I'm going to take you out. He did it again. He did it the third time, and I'm standing there, and the little boy whispered to me, it don't mean nothing until he gets to five. It's funny, but tell me, a child doesn't measure us. If you don't back up what you say, your child will have no respect for what you tell him. If you say, these are the rules, if you violate them, this is what I'm going to do, you better do it. Because the first time that you don't, then they know that there's room to wiggle. And maybe they don't need to do it. Don't set a precedent that they don't have to listen to you. Teach them to respect you. You know what? I'm 62 years old today. And I would not do anything in my life to bring shame on my mother and my father. I didn't always agree with them. And I've done things a lot differently than they did. But that doesn't diminish my love for them and my respect for them, because they gave me life. They gave me a home. They loved me unconditionally and never expected anything from me except to love and respect them. And I'll be forever grateful that I had Christian parents. It doesn't mean you always agree with them, but you need to respect them for who they are. My mother, when I was sick, she stayed up with me all night. When I had my appendix out, I had a hernia operation when I was 18 months old. I didn't know, I don't remember this, but my grandparents tell me. She was at the hospital day and night till I got in and till I left. How can that be time wasted? We need to teach our children to respect our parents, their parents. Don't teach or allow things that must be corrected or changed later. This is the last point for this morning, and I want to make this real clear. What may be cute at age 5 may be very problematic at age 15. Don't try to back up after you've allowed something for 10 or 12 years, and then when they get to be a teenager, then you try to change it, because then you're going to have a problem. It may be hard to overcome the inconsistency that your child, well, I did that back here, why could I do it there, and why can't I do it now? You're going to have to explain to your child the inconsistency. Brother, we need to consider that we don't want to do behavior that we're going to have to change later. Remember, children grow up. You know, I'll be honest with you, brethren. I'm appalled today. When I go to the mall, when I go to Walmart, and I see the way that people dress today. But what blows me away even more is who with them is their mother or their father. And they're dressed worse than they are. And then I'm thinking to myself, how does a child have a chance when that's the example that is set before them? Brethren, whether you like it or not, people watch you every day. And when people see you, they make an impression of you. And you only get one shot at a first impression. That's it. You get one shot at it, and that's it. And the impression you have could stick with somebody, that they will always have that impression of you. And what I'm saying is, we need to be aware of how we portray ourselves to other people. Because not only are the other people watching, our children are watching. Be consistent. Be consistent. Because a child will respect consistency even if they don't understand it. They will respect consistency. Now, closing this point, brethren, there's judgments that you've got to make all along this course. There are judgments that you're going to have to make. You and your husband, mother and father, mom and dad, husband and wife, there are things that you're going to have to choose in your life. But when you have children, there is more at stake than just you and your husband. Because little eyes are watching you. Brethren, I've sat in my office and I've had parents come to me heartbroken, tears streaming down their face, broken because of the action of their parents, because of the action of their children. And the question they ask me, where did it go wrong? What did I do wrong? You know what? That's a hard question to answer. Because sometimes you didn't do anything wrong. Sometimes it's just the course that your child took. It's just the people that they put around it. You know what? You know when the Bible tells you bad company corrupts good morals? One of the most important things you do as a parent, you be sure about who your kids spend time with. Because that has a profound influence in their lives. Who, you know what? Whenever I was gone from my house, my mom and dad knew who I was with, where I was at, every time. And if they ever called and I wasn't there, I'd be grounded. They wanted, now were they overprotective? Now we wouldn't call that overprotective today, would we? You know, there was a time, and I bet me and Buddy have talked about this, there's a time you could set your child out for Saturday and they go out and play all day and you not see them at night and you weren't worried a bit. Those days are gone. Those days are gone. We live in a much different world today. And you know what? People are influenced by the people that they spend time with. Brother, you know, you could set a godly example, instill godly principles, teach your children about God, and you could have them around people of the world, and they'll undo everything that you did if you let them do it. Please take your song book to the song that Brother Mel has selected. We'll begin here this evening, Lord willing. I can't emphasize enough how much love and respect I have for parents. I know how tough your job is because I've done that job. I know how tough it is. And I know that sometimes we beat ourselves up because we think we could have done this, we could have done that. Hindsight's 20/20, it always has been. But let us strive to be the best that we could be. And you know what? I don't think there's a better guidebook in how to raise your child than the Bible. I don't think there's a better book that's ever been written in how to raise a child than God's book. If you take God's book and you follow its principles, you will not go wrong. He knows what's best. Why? Because He created us. If you're here and you're not a Christian, you'd like to become one. If you are and you've made some mistakes and you need to correct some things in your life, we're here to help you do that in any way we can. And we bid you to come forward as together we stand, as we sing.